drink, I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome all the newcomers, congratulate the two people that took 98 chips, and congratulate all the birthday people here. Consider it an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you, it wasn't like that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not willing to talk in front of anybody to tell them what my life was like. Also, I want to thank Damien and Larry for being very hospitable, welcoming me here, and all of you that introduced yourself. I'm here to tell you in a general way what I think I was like, what happened, what I think I'm like now, because I'll tell you, when I got here, I thought I was a nice guy. You'd ask me and I'd tell you. I wasn't that guy. But when I walked the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, my first meeting, I can tell you I had three drunk drivings, I had wrecked three vehicles, I had two felony convictions, I had been on a three-year joint suspension for a number of years, I had been 16 months in the county jail, dropped out of high school, but thought I was a nice guy. And did a lot of other things under the influence that I wasn't proud about. Because when I drink, I really don't care. And if you've got an idea, I'm along for the ride. It doesn't matter. You got an idea, you're willing to do it, I'm like, I'm there with you. So I can tell you, I came from a family, because a lot of people, you know, alcoholism is hereditary, I don't know. I can tell you my birth certificate says father's occupation. My father was a bartender. Doesn't make me an alcoholic. I've got an Irish twin to prove that. We're, some of you know, any Irish people in here? There we go. We're 9 months and 12 days apart. So, it's possible. So what happened is we grew up in exactly the same environment, because I can tell you what I think my childhood was like, and my brother would give you a totally different perception of what it was like. And you think we grew up in two different homes. And we have a totally different reaction to alcohol when it comes to alcohol. My brother likes buying alcohol, storing it, putting it on shelves, and he collects it. I don't get that. Never have. If I got it, I'm drinking it. And I drink it. The one thing we do have in common, though, my brother drinks as much as he can, as often as he can, whenever he wants to. The problem is he only wants to do it like, well, I don't, you know what, I can't remember the last time I seen him drunk. Now, I drink as much as I can, as fast as I can, and I get drunk all the time. He doesn't want to drink all the time, and I don't get it. And when he does drink, he has one or two drinks he doesn't want anymore. I don't get that either. Because I'm thinking, if you're drinking, we're getting drunk. And I started drinking around 14 years old. And I learned early on, Schlitz Malt Liquor, Colt 45, Old English 800, and Mickey's Big Mouth. I'm a smart guy. My parents separated when I was 9 years old, and I remember feeling responsible, thinking if I was a better kid. And people used to look at us when we would go out and thinking, you know, your kids are so well behaved, and I was scared to death of my dad. My dad would whistle and I'd go running. And I was a straight A student, played sports, did well. But there was just something where I just never felt comfortable and fit in. I remember at school one time I had to give an English report. I did school. I didn't want to talk in front of people. It's the last thing I wanted to do. So when I started drinking, it just, I drank to get drunk. And then eventually what happened was, the first time I drank, I got sick. I was probably about 2 years old. I was in a crib. My dad thought it was funny. And but when I started drinking, I drank as much as I could, as fast as I could. And I drank eventually till I puked, and then eventually till I passed out, and then I was drinking until I blacked out. And I can probably sum up my history of drinking was, every day after I drank, I can tell you what I said to myself was, the last thing I remember was, and then I couldn't tell you what happened. And that was kind of the history of my drinking. Because when you drink as fast as you can, it usually doesn't hit you till like an hour later. And what happened to a lot of my drinking was just like that. I started drinking out of beer bongs. And what happened was, school became less important. Sports became less important. And pretty soon, I just wanted to party and go to concerts, and that's what I did. It's funny, coming by here, I remember going to a concert back at Jack Murphy Stadium. If some of you know. I went to concerts. My first concert was the World Music Festival in 79. And life was just a party, going to concerts, because all I wanted to do was just have a good time. I dropped out of high school, and I'm thinking, you know what? You don't have to be smart to graduate high school. There's a lot of people that graduate high school that aren't that smart, so I just figured, you know what, I don't really need to go. I didn't think an education was that important at the time. Because I'm the kind of guy who just likes to party and have a good time. And, you know, and I would black out and pass out, and they would tell me stories later. I remember one 4th of July, I'm out playing horseshoes, and that's the last thing I remember. Kind of how my drinking went. I woke up the next morning, and I opened one eye because I couldn't see out of the other eye because I had a patch on it. And I remember in this bed, and I get up and I look in the mirror, and I look around, and everybody's gone. The place is cleaned up, and I just did what I usually do. I just walked home. I walked home back to my apartment, and there's my roommate and his wife, and they're looking at me, and they're laughing at me, and I'm like, what happened? You were playing horseshoes, and next thing you know, you've been over to pick up a horseshoe. And when I'm drinking, when I'm tired, I'm tired. When I've had enough, I've had enough. And I happen to have enough when I've been over to pick up that horseshoe. I fell right into a greenhouse. Cut my eye open, ended up in the hospital, had 3 or 4 stitches. They wanted to take me to jail because I got aggressive or didn't want to sign some release papers, I guess. I don't know. But I remember waking up looking at the paper the next day with a signature where it looked like I started the signature and then I just fell over. But that's kind of how my drinking was. And it didn't get much better than that. And what happened was is eventually at 20 years old, I started to get into trouble now because now I'm drinking and driving. Now, mind you, I don't have a driver's license. Last thing I remember was I was at the bowling alley. I was 19 years old back when they had blue chip bowling, and I'm spotting for blue chip. The owner who was gone at the racetrack with his partner, who happens to be part of the vice squad for the LA Sheriffs, were at the racetrack. So someone asked me if I wanted to drink. Now, back in the days, I'm that kind of alcoholic. You're buying me a drink. I'm drinking Long Island iced teas. Fuzzy Mothers, whatever. So the last thing I remember was I had had a six-pack, and I was sitting there, and I had 3 Long Island iced teas in front of me. That's the last thing I remember. The next thing I remember is that I see this red and blue light behind me. I'm driving my brother's car going down Norwalk Boulevard with 60 miles an hour, and I got my first 502. Now, I'm scared to death because I'm a guy who just likes to party and have a good time. That's all. And remember, people said, you're going to get in trouble. You don't have a driver's license. And I thought, I don't want to go to jail because I'm a nice guy. And I found out through some inventory work, nice guys go to jail. But I found out I wasn't a nice guy. I was a criminal. So what happened was someone said, you better go down and get your driver's license. So I made sure I went down. I was 20 years old. I got my driver's license. I was really proud. I showed it for my court date, and I showed the judge. Look, I got my driver's license. It said, Mr. Wilson, let me see your driver's license. And they took it. I never saw that driver's license again for it. That was at 20 years old. I finally got a valid, and by the way, I am a valid card-carrying driver's license. I have one today. I was 30 years old before I got a valid driver's license. I find out. Now, I wanted a driver's license. They wouldn't give it to me. The state of California said, Mr. Wilson, you need to stop drinking and driving. Now, I could stop for a little while, but I couldn't stay stopped because they want you to stop for like 3 years. And that's a long time. Because I'm that kind of guy, you know what, I won't drink and drive, and then after a while I'm drinking, it's like I'm just going to drive here, and then I'm going to drive there, and then pretty soon I'm back to drinking and driving again. And that's what happened. So it's real important. It was 1983 that I got my first drunk driving. I got my third drunk driving. It was January 1st, 1990. They're exactly 7 years apart. My drinking got worse. Like I said, I ended up getting in trouble. I ended up moving out of my dad's house. I'm trying to work and be successful, but I like drinking. I'm hanging out at the bowling alley. And my drinking is from, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now I can't make it to work on Monday. And what happens is I lose that job. I'm on probation, and I'm testing. And, I decide that, you know what, I'm just going to, because they told me, they said, you know what, if I ever see you, you know, back here again and we're going to violate, you're going to go to prison for 3 years. But that scared me. What happened was a lot of my experiences, they scared me long enough until I was over it. Here's what I can tell you to sum it up. I spent half of my life getting into trouble. The other half I spent getting out of the trouble that I spent the other half getting into trouble in. And it was a vicious cycle. So when I walked in the doors here, I'm thinking, you know, I had heard some things when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can like to tell you, as I said, my drinking didn't get, you know, any better. I ended up one time right before I got sober. It was March 9th, 1990. It was my last drunk. And it's one I'll never remember, but it's probably one I'll never forget. You know, I drank at the drop of a hat, you know. And what happened was my girlfriend pissed me off one more time, so I decided I was going to show her. And that's what I do is I get drunk. So I was with a friend. We're hanging out at work. And he says, you ever played football? And I said, well, no, it's football. He said, well, you get a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 and a bottle of nitrate, and you drink it. I'm thinking, I'm game. Now, I'm not a wine connoisseur, but I remember growing up drinking Boone's Farm in California coolers. But that wasn't my thing. You know, my thing was I heard tequila, Jack Daniels. You know, I remember one time, you know, because I did whatever I could to drink. You know, when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, it's hard to get it. So I learned early on, you can go back in the stores back there and steal a bottle. I'll never forget the first time I went to steal a bottle, I'm looking up there and I said, you know, I need to get one of those flat bottles. So I got one flat bottle and stuck in my pants. And my next thought was, well, geez, if you're going to stick one, stick two in there. And that's how I drank. And that's how, you know, alcohol ran my life. Because I never wanted to stop when I started. You know, it's like that's why I drank was to get drunk. But I didn't see anything wrong with that. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. But the truth was, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I just knew I wasn't one. So I decided to go to the store, and I tell him, you know what, I'll be right back. So I went to try to find a bottle of Mad Dog and a bottle of Nitrane. They didn't have any Mad Dog 2020, but I grabbed me a bottle of Nitrane and him a bottle of Nitrane. I grabbed the two biggest bottles I could. And I proceeded to drink that just like I drank everything else. And I'll never forget, as I'm drinking it, he looked at me and goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm drinking it. He said, you can't drink it like that. And I thought, why not? I'll tell you why you shouldn't drink it like that. I polished off that bottle in about 10, 15 minutes. You know where this is going. And I'm good. But what happened was my boss called me and said, James, I need you to go to downtown L.A. I'm thinking, I can do this. I hop in the company truck, and I'm on my way to downtown L.A. The last thing I remember was... I remember sitting on a wooden bench in the hallway. Now, you guys have heard that commercial, is it Live or is it Memorex? You've woken up the next morning and go, did that really happen or was that just a dream? Because I don't know. I woke up the next morning and I found out that I had wrecked another company truck. Now, I had wrecked another company truck already on New Year's of 1990. Because I was out in Riverside with my girlfriend at the time, and she had pissed me off, and I decided to go get a bottle of tequila. I finished off that bottle of tequila, and when I'm drinking, I have my best ideas. Right after I finished that bottle, I thought, you know what? I'm out of here. I hopped in that company truck. I get on the freeway, and what happens is like it happens every other time. I got tired as I'm turning. I just fell over. I took out about 30 feet of guardrail, turned the truck over on the driver's side, crawled up through the top, and that's kind of how my drinking was. You know, my first 502 was on the 10 freeway. I ended up blacked out, passed out, behind the wheel. Next thing I remember, I came to, I'm up on someone, I turned the wheel to miss him, I clipped the back rear end of it, turned the van over on the driver's side, slide about 40, 50 yards down the freeway over the overpass almost, end up walking out through the front windshield. And that's just a lot of the stuff that happened to me when I was drinking. Never once did I think I was an alcoholic and maybe I should stop drinking. Drinking was a solution for me. My problem was all the other stuff that happened. Drinking was never a problem for me. It was a solution. So it wasn't until that last day, and I heard it said when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, you know what, if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you're in the right place. They said, it doesn't matter if you come from Yale or jail, Park Place or Park Bench, if your drink is causing you problems or your problems are causing you to drink, you're in the right place. And you know what? Those were things I identified with. Because when I finally got here, I was 26 years old. As I gave you a little rough draft, I was a high school dropout, 3 DUIs, wrecked 3 vehicles, you know, spent 16 months in and out of the county jail. I'll never forget, the only thing that ever occurred to me, never once did I think, God help me. One time, I'm sitting in a jail cell, and they want to send me to prison for 4 years. I remember my attorney telling me, James, if there's anything you want to say to the attorney, now's the time to say it. Now, I knew there was nothing I could say to this judge to convince her not to send me to prison. Nothing. I'd been absconding for a year, picked up another case. She had every right to throw the book at me. But for the first time in my life, this was in 89. First time in my life, I remember that my attorney walked out of the holding cell there, and I got on my knees for the first time in my life and said, God, help me. Because I knew this was one of the first times and only times that I knew there was nothing I can do to get myself out of that situation. I knew it. And I said, you know what, the only thing I knew how to do, we heard that alcoholic prayer, God, help me. And I walked in that courtroom, and I'll never forget, the attorney put his arm on my shoulder and said, it's going to be okay. Judge Ramona Perez looked at me and said, Mr. Wilson, I'm going to give you one last chance. I'm going to reinstate your 3-year joint suspension. If I ever see you in my courtroom again, you will go to prison. I got back. I couldn't wait to get off the bus. I got out of there. First thing is I called my mom to come get me, and I thought, you know what? My problem was that other stuff. I've been locked up for 11 months. A 6-pack and a pizza would be nice right now. The heat's off. And when the heat's off, I'm good. And I forget about what happened. That's what happens to me with alcohol. I got a quick forgetter because it does something to me and for me that I'm not willing to completely give up. You know, so I ended up, my mom picked me up in a blackout. And thank God, she didn't know what to do with me, but she took me to the Metropolitan State Hospital. I guess she thought I was crazy. I didn't think so, but I've been coming to meetings long enough. I hear a lot of alcoholics end up in the insane asylum. But I'll never forget, they looked at me and they said, you know what? Don't think he's crazy, but he smells like he has an alcohol problem. You know what? There's a detox right next door. You know, that was March 10th, 1990. I checked into that detox because I just didn't know what else to do. I'd run out of answers. And thank God. First time in my life, I didn't know what to do. And you know what? Going to a treatment program sounded pretty good at that time because I knew I was looking at prison now. I didn't want to go back and see that judge. So I got involved and introduced Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to take direction for the first time in my life. Got involved with Joe and Charlie, and it's funny because I remember it being down here in 1992 at some middle school out here for the Joe and Charlie Big Book Comes Alive. They told me, get a hold of that big book and read it. And that's what I did. They call the big book a basic text, and it's a textbook you should study. And I agree, yeah, it's a study. But I better learn it, read it, and live it. Because I can study and quote it and know everything about it, but if I don't apply it to my life, it just doesn't do me any good. Because I'm a smart guy. But it never kept me out of trouble and kept me sober. And what happened was I started underlining a bunch of things in that book that I started to identify with. And what happened is about 45 days in that program, it came to me. I knew what my problem was. It wasn't her. It wasn't them. It wasn't him. It wasn't my dad. It's that I knew for the first time, and the big book talks about it, that I had finally admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And I knew it. And I remember like it was yesterday that I had taken the first step and didn't even know it. I remember sitting in my counselor's office, and he said, James, where do you find God? And I'm that kind of guy that I consider myself pretty smart. And when you put me on the spot and ask me a question, I better know the answer. And if not, I'll make up something that sounds good. And I'll never forget, that kind of panic came over me, and I thought, okay, you better think of something. And I'll never forget, I looked outside and I thought, well, God's out there. You know, the birds and the trees. And he said, no, no, no. He said, God's in here. And he took me to a portion of the big book on page 55, and I heard Michelle quote it. Deep down in every man, woman, child is a fundamental idea of God. And it talked about being obscured by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. But in some form or other is there. And I realized, he said, my job is to get you out of here and into here. And I looked at him and I thought, why? I didn't like that place. I've been living up here my whole life. I'm pretty good. I'm still trying to work at it and I'm figuring it out. I've had some bad luck along the way, but I'll get this figured out. Because I don't want to get into here. I really don't. I like living up here because it keeps everything busy and moving. But I finally started to take direction. I got involved in Alcoholics, and I would start going to meetings. I ended up going back to jail one last time, and thank God. They had us all lined up because back then it was 7 years. Now it's 10 years. I had 3 DUIs exactly 7 years apart. So I ended up having to go to jail. They had us all lined up, and I ended up doing 90 days. And I'll never forget, it was June 21st, 1990. It was the first day of summer. It was hot that summer. I got out September 19, 1990. It was the last day of summer. I went back to that rehab and that treatment program expecting to see all the people we used to kick it with and hang out and talking about how we're going to stay sober. And I walked back there and saw a bunch of faces I didn't know. And I looked at people and they looked at me and I thought, well, who are you? And they said, well, who are you? And I thought, I was here before you. This is my place. And then I said, hey, what happened to Ricky? What happened to Larry? What happened to Jack? And I started to hear the stories. Mario went out and got drunk. Ricky was passed out drunk on the weight bench. And it got my attention. Because I knew if they got drunk, I could get drunk too. And they looked around and said, you know, only a couple of you are going to make it. And I thought, it scared me. Because I knew I didn't really want to stay sober, really. I was more worried about not going to prison. That was more of a pressing issue in my life. But what happened, I started this process, and they told me to get involved, and I got a sponsor, and I did my four step. And what happened was I wrote that stuff on paper, and I started to find out that father I resented and all those things. Because I realized when you guys told me is that your problem is people, places, and things. And I thought, well, I know that, but I still, my solution was to drink over it. And they said, you know, we got a better solution. Try working these steps. And I didn't realize the steps were the solution to my problem. Because you know what happened? After I worked those steps, my life got better. I didn't hate my dad. He got better. Because the truth was, is my perception was a little askew. I didn't know it, but that's what I believed. I felt justified. I hated my dad. He left us when I was 9 years old. But through that process, I was able to take a look at how I'd been affected by those things. And what happened was I started to get some relief, and I started to see things a little differently. And eventually, I was able to make an amends to my dad, and we had a good relationship. You know, I remember my dad used to call me when I was a kid, and I hated him. I never wanted to talk to him, because he'd always tell me, you stand out of trouble. And I think, why do you care now? You didn't care when I was 9 years old. I don't want you to care. And I listed all those fears about, you know what, getting divorced. Because I have a solution for everything. You don't want to get divorced, don't get married. It works. The problem is now, I don't like to be alone either. So you grab a hostage, and then hopefully you have this mutual relationship. I didn't know that's what it was. What's happened in Alcoholics Anonymous over the years of my life started to get better. I finally got that driver's license. What happened was is that I got a letter from the DMV that said, congratulations, Mr. Wilson, you're eligible to get your driver's license. I thought, that's crazy. So I got a car, got the insurance. I went down there so proud. And I got to the window, and she said, I'll be right back. And I thought, uh-oh, I know. She said, you know what, I'm sorry. She said, because your last DUI was exactly 7 years to the day, and you refused to give a breathalyzer, so your license has been revoked for 3 more years. I know. She said, but I've got good news. I thought, I spent $500 for car insurance that I can't drive. What's the good news? She said, by the time you're eligible to get your driver's license, you won't need an SR-22 filing. I don't care about 3 years from now. I care about right now. But it was one of those things. I thought God was doing something for me. He wasn't. But I got busy. I went back to school. I ended up getting my high school diploma because what happened was they said, you want to go to college? Yeah. I said, okay, get enrolled in college. And they said, well, I don't have money. They said, well, you can apply for financial aid. I thought, okay. They said, do you have a high school diploma? And I said, no. They said, well, you need to get one. So I went down and took the GED test. Now, I had about 70 credits short to be able to graduate. But I scored well enough on the test that they were going to give me 50 credits just because I'd scored well enough. You know, I quit school. That wasn't for me. But I've taken some actions in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time in my life and started to listen to other people. And my life got better. Eventually, that hostage I had, we got married in 93, and life was good. Because she told me, you better do something or I'm out of here. Remember, her dad said, don't do it. He was going to pay me. I didn't listen. I love those people today. But what happened was is that she wanted to have a family. And I'm thinking, you know what, I'm okay, but I don't want to push the issue. My dad said, when am I going to have a grandkid? You know, I can't depend on your other two brothers. And I thought, Dad, I'm trying. But my ex-wife, she couldn't have kids. But we went through this whole in vitro fertilization and process because I'm thinking, okay, God, if it's your will, I'm willing to do so much, but I don't know how far I'm willing to go, but I'll give it a shot. Because, you know, it's like when you try, but you don't really want to try too hard because if it really happens, then what? You know, now you're stuck. See, at least I have a way out. I'm always looking for like an ace in the hole because I'm never, ever fully committed because I've got a fear of commitment. I found that out in my four step when I did my fifth step. a lot of fears that I had. Because when the going gets tough, I'm gone. Because I can't get drunk anymore. So my options are getting limited now. But I was willing to do it, and I said, okay, God, and we went through this in vitro fertilization. She ended up, didn't get pregnant the first time. It was bad. It was Christmas. And what happened was, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned, I got a phone call from my stepmom. My stepmom said, James, you know what? My sister's got this grandbaby that they're going to adopt out, and they're going to lose her, and you know what? You guys would be able to adopt her. I'm thinking, okay, God, we talked about adoption, but you know what? It's like picking a car. It's like you said, James, go out there and pick any car you want. I would pick one, and then after I left, I'm thinking, you know what? I picked the wrong one. Because what if something happens with this one, and then there was another one that was better that I'd be happier with? Because I'm afraid of commitment. Because once I commit to something, it's like, this is it. You're stuck with it. And that scares me. It really does. So what happened was I talked to my wife and said, look, here's what's going on. What do you think? So we drove up to Hayward, California. I got to meet with the baby's attorney and said, you know what, this is who I am, this is what we do, and I'm familiar with how this works in the system, and we're here to adopt this child if the parental rights are terminated. And what the lady said to me was, and I told her, I said, look, here's my life, and I told her. And she said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to write a letter on what you did, what happened, and what you're doing now. Yeah. Turned out she was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And who would have known? I thought, I can do this. You know, when I walked through that process, I got to adopt a little girl. My dad got to be a grandfather before he passed away. Because what happened was, is during that time, we were having to go up north every weekend. We were driving 360 miles to Jamestown to spend time. That baby's attorney said, look, here's what I want you to do. The baby was 6 months old at the time. Said, I want you to try and spend as much time with the child you can and bond with them until we come up with some permanent plans. Because I don't think the parents are going to end up getting their stuff together. And we did. But what it did was it gave me time with my dad. And he got to spend time with my dad. My dad got to be a grandfather and play with that baby. I got to take my dad, it was 2004, to the VA hospital in Livermore to get some blood work done. And Mother's Day he called me and found out he had leukemia. You know, my dad and I didn't have a great relationship, but over the years when I got sober, we got to spend some time together. And I was able to do one thing with my dad and tell him something that I had never told him before. Because my dad did something for me really, really special. That I never, ever told him. And not a lot of people can say. You know, what my dad did is, I never forget, he got a ticket to the Super Bowl between the Rams and the Steelers. I was like 14 years old. He dropped me down at the old Olympic Auditorium. Actually, he dropped me off at the Rose Bowl to go to the game. And I never thanked him for that. I got a chance to do that. When my dad passed, we were good. And because of you people, my dad didn't have to worry about me anymore. He knew I was good. You know, we adopted that little girl, brought her home, and what happened in that marriage? That marriage didn't work out because I found out my wife didn't want to be married anymore. I was 16 years sober. I'll never forget, we ended up in counseling and therapy, and she had us doing this exercise. In the middle of the exercise, she looked at the therapist, and she said, you know what, I don't want to be married anymore. So the therapist said, you know what, do you want him to move or you move? She's like, you know what, I'll move. At 16 years sober, here I am with a 5-year-old kid and a wife that doesn't want to be married. You know what? And I remember at 16 years sober going into a meeting because I didn't know what else to do, but ended up walking the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they asked me to lead this morning meeting. And I really didn't want to lead the meeting. I really didn't. But what happened was during that meeting, I remember reading the readings, and it talks about at the end, you know, a moment of silence for the alcoholic that still suffers and out of this room. I used to always think that when I got here, the alcoholic that was still suffering was the one that was still drinking. And what happened was I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous suffering. You know, when I realized that, you know what, I used to think that just because I got sober, my life would get better. And you know what's happened? There's been a lot of good things, but there's also been a lot of bad things that have happened in my life that have turned out to actually be really good things. I got it twisted. What I think and what I feel is really bad happening in my life is actually, I remember my sponsor telling me this. He said, James, God ain't doing this to you. He's doing it for you. He's got something better for you. Now, I'm that kind of guy, I told you already. I'm not willing to give up something until I know I've got something else. Because it makes it a little bit easier to let go. Because I let go with claw marks. I'm just not willing to let go. Because then, it's scary. Then what? You know? I was able to walk through that separation and that divorce. And what it did for me is it got me busy and active in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what happened was, is when I got sober, my life got busy. As I said, I'm working. I'm getting promoted. I went back to school. I'm working full-time. I'm going to school full-time, working a part-time job. My life is busy. I'm going to maybe one meeting a week. maybe two. Now, I'm not going to meetings because I don't feel like going. I'm busy. My life is busy. What happened was the life that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me got in the way of Alcoholics Anonymous. It happened. Because I remember used to think, it's not like I'm not going to meetings. It's just that, you know what, when you've got this whole, you know, because it's one thing to have a baby, you bring home a newborn. It's another thing to have this 14-month-old child that you bring home, and all of a sudden you've got this 14-month-old child in your life. And we had our niece that moved in with us, who just said, you know what, Uncle Jimmy, when I graduate high school, I want to move in with you and go to college. I didn't have any kids until I was 40 years old. You know, now I've got this little 14-month-old and this teenager. But you know what? I look back, and you know what? That little girl, that niece that we had has never forgotten. She said, Uncle Jimmy, you know, I'll never forget what you did for me. Because you know what? I was able to be a father figure to her and help her move on with her life. And what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is to be there for other people, because it's not always about me. It's what I can do for other people. And one of the things they said that I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, that when I got here, I didn't think much about myself, but I was all I ever thought about. They said humility. They said, it's not how highly you think of yourself, it's how often you think of yourself. I thought about myself a lot. Because I didn't think anybody else was, so if nobody else was thinking about me, who's going to take care of me? Me. But the truth was, I realized when I got here, I was 26 years old, thinking, hadn't done a good job. That wasn't my plan either. But it's what happened. I had to realize. Someone said, you know what? You got dealt a bad hand in life. I did the best I could with what I had. What Alcoholics Anonymous had was a better way of living for me. But I had to be willing to give up the way that I had been living. You know what? I had nothing else to lose. You know, I got to a point, like I said, I was sick and tired and I was desperate and I was willing. And I did those things. And what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is it's one thing to get here. It's another thing to stay here. You know, I heard it said here, you know what, I don't go to meetings because my life is good. My life is good because I continue to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I go to meetings because my life is good, and once my life is good, I don't need to go to meetings no more. I really don't. Exactly. It's been a one-day-at-a-time process because I realize I need Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I did when I got here. Because of the people and the purpose that I have today is to give back what was freely given to me. There was a lot of people I look back that gave of their time and were there to listen to me. And every time I complained and I wanted to talk about this or that, they'd say, where's God in all this? And I'm thinking, God, what do you mean, God? I'm telling you what's going on. This is what's happening. I've had to find a God in all those things. And I'll never forget when I walked to that divorce. Because what happened was is that, you know, it wasn't just she left me. It was that dance. She would leave for 6 months, come back for 6 months, leave for 6 months, come back for 6 months. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's going to change. And I'll never forget, she filed the divorce papers and never filed the response. And I remember thinking, you know what? Because I've got 16 years in this marriage. Am I ready to walk away? You know, I found myself in this dilemma, and one more time was another surrender. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it. I had to surrender another area of my life. It was really easy for me to surrender alcohol, but to surrender my marriage. And I remember thinking, God, if you want me to be divorced, then you know what? Let's file the papers and let's get on with it. I just couldn't live the way I was living anymore. But what I did is I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous and to do what people started to do. As I started to show up to functions, I started to get busy. I started to hang out with newcomers and people that had less time. And I started to get active and get involved and going to meetings early and doing things. I quit school. I'm raising that girl by myself because Alcoholics Anonymous has become a priority because I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink and I don't want to feel like I want to crawl up in a ball and die either. I want to live. And what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was living by taking those actions and doing those things, and my life got better and it got better. And I was able to walk through that divorce. You know, people talk about it. It's crazy because she ended up leaving me for my best friend. I know, but you know what? You should be more worried and, you know, think about what his wife thought. Hey, my sponsor said the acid test is that would you want to trade places with either of them? No? No. Someone said in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're around here long, and if you're going to get in a relationship, stuff is going to happen. And you know what? Thank God for the people that continue to show up and share their experience with me. You know, because you get to meetings, we always talk about how great life is. And it is. But the reality of it is, life still happens. And I've had to learn to get through it. And thank God for those long timers. Because my grandfather told me about the time that he remember had to pour coffee when his girlfriend, his wife left him. He used to say, you know what, if you want what I got, he had some newcomer that ended up taking his wife, his car, his house, everything. This is back in the 70s. I can only imagine what was going on in AA back then. I knew what was going on out where I was living. He remember having to pour coffee and watching them swap spit in a meeting. His sponsor told him. And I love those old timers. Those old timers that just said, you know what, sit down, shut up, and listen. And this is what we do. And we don't drink no matter what. You know, the basic principles in Alcoholics Anonymous that when I don't know what else to do is get back to basics and trust in a God. Like he said, God ain't doing this to you. He's doing it for you. And you know what? As I look back and stayed sober through it, I look back and, you know, it's been the greatest gift. It really has. We were able to get through that divorce. We had a custody struggle. As I said, I've got busy and active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up dating someone that started this relationship because I'm thinking, you know what? My life is over. I remember when I was a kid, this guy, it was like 19 years old, this guy used to have this shirt that said, life begins at 50. And I used to think, wow, that's 50. That's old. Life's just beginning. I know. I'm 51. My life is just beginning. You know, I was able to started dating someone and, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous one more time. Because everything that I had on that first original fear list is things that I've been able to walk through and stay sober. And the good thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that you can get around here other than sobriety is experience. Because you know what? When you're able to pass it on to someone else. And I'd like to tell you that I wouldn't want to share the experience that I have today if it was really my choice. I could think of 100 other things I would like to have experience with and be able to share. But the pain that I've been able to share has been the greatest gift and the healing for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, but the other people that have gone through it, that no matter what, that there is something better on the other side if you just stay sober no matter what. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to walk through that with dignity and hold my head up to where people looked at me. You know, a lot of people said, you know what, I had no idea what was going on. And I said, because you know what, that's between me and God. And that's the thing that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when my life is good, I mean, me and God were okay, but I don't really need God. It's like, we're good. But when I'm on my knees and I'm in a lot of pain, God and I are like right there. Because it's in those darkest times that I've been able to turn to God and realize and start to develop and continue this relationship and a trust in a God. Because like you said, when I got here, you know, I'm like that lefty. I got that bush league God. You know, I'll call on you when I need you. But the truth is I need God every day and I just don't know it because I'm thinking life is good. I don't really, really need him. You know, I've been able to do that. I got involved in the Pacific Group a couple of years ago because I realized once I got remarried and moved out, I'm thinking I'm going to go to meetings where I'm living now on the West Side. I did there what I learned to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is go to the yard, get to meetings early, start to meet newcomers and get involved with people that are new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what has happened is my life has changed and transformed. That ex-wife made an amends to me and said, you know what, I'm sorry for the way I treated you and the things that I did. And I was able to forgive her because you know what, she's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Who's got a long way to go. And I said, you know what, I don't hate you. And I hope you can find what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you know what, for the whole purpose of, you know what, we have a 12-year-old daughter now that we're trying to raise. And the greatest gift is that our daughter has been able to see us, facilitate her back and forth and be able to go to her school nights and be able to talk to her teachers. And she knows that we're both there for her. You know, and I've been able to let her have custody of her because I just wasn't able to. At 22 years sober, I decided to leave a job I had been with for 19 years. It was security. I didn't want to leave. This guy had been asking me for a long time about moving and changing jobs, and it was for a facility out in Costa Mesa. And I thought, you know what? Finally, I'm going to do this. And I was willing to take that risk and that leap of faith, and I left that job. And then 2 weeks later, he died of a heart attack. And I found myself unemployed for the first time in my life and recently married with a wife that wasn't cool about me not working. She's like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm like, well. But I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, someone said about being a service, there's more than different types of service. And what I learned to do was to try to make the lunch for the kids, cook breakfast, do the laundry, do this, do that. And I did the things to make it a family function. You know, eventually what happened, I ended up landing this job 9 months later. And what I've seen is Alcoholics Anonymous, and God worked for me as I'm thinking, okay, during that time, I had time for guys that I was sponsoring, making time for them, taking a look at my life to find out what was really, really important to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it gave me some time to collect unemployment for a while. And what happened was as soon as that unemployment dried up, and I found myself at 22, 23 years sober, broke and overdrawn on a checking account. Didn't know what that was like sober. Didn't know, but you know what? I was okay going through that. And I knew that God was going to be there. As long as I continue to be put one foot in front of the other, carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to new people and let them know that how I feel and what I'm doing is not dictated about what's going on with my life. God's going to take care of that as long as I take care of the other business. And I was able to get through this and get a job that started my unemployment. They sent me a letter saying, you know, we're sorry, but, you know, your unemployment's been cut off and they're not going to extend anybody any more money, even if you have money that's still owed to you. That was right after Christmas. You know, I got the job January 16th, and I've been working ever since then. And you know what? I've got money in the bank today. I've got a car to drive still. My life is good. Alcoholics Anonymous is taking care of me. You know, and the thing that I've learned to do is to find some peace and happiness in my life, no matter what's going on, and start to enjoy the good things in life. You know, the message that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is that no matter what's going on, the good times and the bad times, because they're going to come. You know, the greatest gift I have found is to take the time for someone that's new, that's struggling in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to get this deal, this relationship with the God they found. And I found it in the Big Book, I found it through the steps, and I found it through sharing my experience with other people and getting to know people. And you know what? My world has gotten so much bigger. I was talking to them before the meeting. He was talking about the CDs and said, yeah, he goes, you know, you never know who you're going to relate to. He goes, we had this lady in here, he said, a while back that was 15 years old when she got sober. I said, that must be Deb H. He goes, yeah. I said, you know, my sponsor's is her boyfriend. What a small world. You know, the fact that I realized it's not so much small that the world has gotten smaller, it's that because my life has gotten bigger, the world seems to be smaller. Thanks.